Hello and welcome back to Better with Becky, a podcast for anyone on the journey to a stronger self and a better life. It's December. Somehow over a month has passed since the last recording, and I figured it's time to check back in and just share a little bit of what's been going on in my corner of the world. And maybe as you have me in your ear holes doing some chores or driving your commute or whatever it is you're doing, whenever you get to listen, give you a little chance to reflect on what's going on in your corner of the world. So today, given we are just barreling through what I affectionately like to call Happy Hello Thanksmas Eve silly season, you know, we're through Halloween. Hopefully you've given thanks for all the good in your life and maybe done some planks if you did the Thanks and Planks challenge for Thanksgiving season in November. And now here we are in December, looking ahead to kind of that festive, maybe you celebrate Christmas or something similar season, and then not long after the new year and all to come. And I don't know about you, but I feel like this time of year, I always get pretty reflective. I think that's pretty natural. There's kind of this, you know, especially if you live in a place where the seasons change, the leaves have fallen. It's clearly kind of a season where nature at least looks like it's going through a small death of sorts before the spring and new life that will come. And I think that also as the days get shorter and there's more darkness and we stay in more and we're around maybe the people that we've chosen to build our families around and spend our lives with, it's natural to just be a little bit more reflective, particularly during the holiday season. So I find that the season can be one of course, light and joy and festivities, but it can also have this kind of darker, harder, sometimes heavier side to it that is also very human. And so this episode is going to be about kind of holding both the light and the dark. And I want to honor some people that I've lost over the course of my life. And actually the people I'll talk about today, I lost all four of them in the month of December over the years. And so I think there's something in particular about December for me personally, where as the anniversaries of their deaths approach, I like to remember them and honor them. And, you know, that brings up all kinds of reflections on their legacies. And then that leads to maybe reflection on how am I living my life? What legacy might I be leaving? And that just dovetails really beautifully, actually, with the end of the year and kind of really intentionally taking that pause to look back and think about how I lived my life the last 12 months, what the highs and lows were, what I'm most proud of, and perhaps didn't accomplish yet that I might still want to in the year to come. And then that leads to maybe setting those new intentions and goals and getting clear on what really matters to me moving forward. So let's start with what the season can bring up for so many of us outside of just that, you know, very happy festive side of things. And, you know, I'm all for the festive side. Side note, I have absolutely loved going to Halloween parties and seeing Disney decorated for all of the seasons and spending time and making memories with friends old and new and seeing loved ones. All of that is absolutely filling my cup this season. And I just think we don't talk enough about the other side of the coin, and that really a life well lived is not just striving for happiness and positive emotions, but it's really navigating the full spectrum of human emotion. And that means being able to tolerate the difficult times as well, and sitting with the sometimes more silent, intangible, tricky feelings that can come up in between all of the really positive highs. But you know, the Justin and I like to tell each other sometimes the sweet isn't as sweet without the bitter, or, you know, how would we know joy without sadness? And I think that this episode is just an attempt to hold some space for the coexistence of both ends of that spectrum, emotionally speaking. There can be a lot of pressure to feel merry and to feel really happy this time of year, but there's actually some research showing that the more we strive for that positive emotion, sometimes for some people, the more anxiety and pressure and difficult emotions can come up. So instead, maybe just kind of carving out space to be with the reality of the emotional complexity that can kind of rise and fall and really ride those waves with some mindful awareness. I think a lot of times accepting that grief and gratitude can and often do coexist, and that, you know, maybe light doesn't erase darkness, but they kind of define each other. I think that that's a really important piece of the puzzle too, this time of year. And I've, you know, come to understand that best and understand best how I want to live my life really, and the legacy I hope to leave through the people that I've loved and lost, and in particular, remembering them this time of year as the anniversaries of those deaths come and go. So I'm going to just share with you each of those people, who they were, what they meant to me, kind of a little bit of what each one taught me about grief, maybe about love and living, and the things that stuck with me and the legacies that continue to shape how I now see the world and life and maybe my own purpose and intention moving forward. So the first friend I'll share with you is Sasha. She was really the first major loss in my life. It was my freshman year of college, and Sasha passed away very suddenly in a car accident on New Year's Eve. And, you know, the shock and trauma of losing Sasha left me feeling very disoriented. And I was so young. I think even though I thought I really knew what my beliefs were spiritually at that time, I think that was the first thing that really shook them a little bit and really challenged how firm those beliefs were. And, you know, over the years, I did shift in my beliefs. At that age, I was attending Calvin College. It's a pretty conservative Christian college in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I had been raised, you know, pretty, I would term it fundamentalist Christian. And that's a very long story for another episode. And, you know, now I'm agnostic, maybe even slightly leaning towards atheism. I'm always very open and curious and kind of, you know, never say never. If compelling evidence comes my way, I'm very open. And I do still feel like I have a very curious spiritual side to me, but it just isn't really within the realm of Christianity and religion any longer. But at that age, I very much was still within that fold. And I think that so many things came up for me around Sasha's death, that for whatever reason, I think I was still so much younger and had experienced so little life that my thinking and my beliefs were still very black and white, very all or nothing, very good or bad. And so for a very long time, I remember, even though I believed in God, I believed in heaven, Sasha was a Christian too, and I remember thinking, I should feel so comforted believing that she's now in heaven with God and all of her pain is gone. Instead, I really couldn't access gratitude at the time. It was just pure grief and disbelief and difficult, challenging feelings. And, you know, with time, as I matured and as I lost other people and as my perspectives and my beliefs and my views of the world shifted, I came to realize how formative Sasha's death was for me in the beginning to really wrestle with the fragility of life and even really the fragility of my belief structure and what I thought was my very firm spirituality at the time. So, you know, unfortunately, Sasha's death for me at 18 was just basically traumatic. I could only really remember what she looked like at the funeral. I couldn't really access the joy and the memories of the beautiful life she lived. And I think because of that all or nothing thinking, I just kind of couldn't understand that grief and gratitude could coexist. But I think Sasha taught me eventually, once I did mature and I looked back on that, and I'll talk more about the next person I lost and how that helped me reframe. I think looking back, Sasha taught me that really truly remembering and honoring somebody's life fully means allowing both the pain of losing them and the beauty of remembering who they were at their best. So then fast forward about 18 years, and I lost another friend from actually that same friend circle. But this time I was a very different person. So I actually just posted about this friend. Her name was Nikki. And I lost Nikki in 2021, so 4 years ago. And she also died in an unexpected car accident. This time, you know, we were both adults. She was married. She had a child who is, her husband and her daughter Lola are continuing to live life and honor her memory and legacy. And I think that's actually part of why Nikki somehow, her death landed with me completely differently than Sasha's. I think by the time I lost Nikki 4 years ago, so I was 36 instead of 18, literally I had lived double the life. I was 18 when I lost Sasha. Fast forward 18 years, at 36, I lose Nikki. And I just, this may sound very odd, but now remember, fast forward, I'm out of the church. I am more agnostic, but I also have this kind of new spirituality of sorts of more of this like embodied mindfulness of being able to tolerate difficult emotions, not trying to escape from them and only feel positive things, not living in the black and white all or nothing, but actually kind of embracing the intangible gray areas of life. And so when I lost Nikki, I remember going to her funeral in Phoenix, Arizona, and I remember arriving and there was something, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but kind of bear with me as I try to explain and maybe it will make sense. There was something actually very comforting about having that broader perspective outside of the religious belief. And I'm not saying that if you have religious beliefs, if you believe in God or heaven, that that is wrong or could not be comforting. I absolutely think that is very comforting for many people and is a completely valid thing to believe. It's just no longer my belief structure. For whatever reason, for me personally, outside of that belief structure, when I just kind of had to sit with the fact of, okay, Nikki lived this beautiful life. She was a wonderful mother, a fantastic friend, great sister and daughter, and now she's gone. And I don't have the comfort anymore of believing she's in heaven or that she's in a better place. I just kind of believe she's gone and that the beautiful life she lived has come to an end. There was something about that that actually felt a little bit easier to me. And I think it had something to do with kind of the idea that while our lives mean everything to the people we love, and of course they mean a lot to us, but you know, when we pass away, we're no longer there. So it's really about the people that are left behind. And in the vastness of the world and the full human experience, although our lives mean so much to the people we love, they can and do find a way to go on and keep living. So, you know, I remember thinking at the time, you know, Nikki was very young, 36. Her husband's still very young. It's very likely he will meet someone else. He may even marry again. And sure enough, 3 years later, he's remarried. Lola, her daughter, has a step sibling. So, you know, he can go on. He has gone on, and that's good. That's healthy. And that's also what Nikki probably would have wanted. And I think when I kind of, you know, frame that in terms of my own life, while I know I matter and I know my life has value, I'm actually pretty comforted by the idea that in the vastness of the world, I don't matter that much. I'm not the center of the universe. The world does not revolve around Becky Searles, thank God. And, you know, if, God forbid, something happens to me or to Justin, the other of us will find a way to continue on, because that is just what happens in life. And it won't mean that our lives mattered any more or less. It won't mean that the love was any more or less important or real. But it does mean that we are not the center of the universe, and we don't matter that much. I mean, we matter so, so much, of course, but, you know, I find that strangely liberating and freeing, to kind of like help me release that illusion that I have to sort of control things or cling to life. And instead, I can just kind of simply live it with love as intentionally as possible for as long as I'm given, and enjoy the journey. Now, not long after losing Nikki, I kind of watched from a distance another story of loss unfold. And this time it was a girl named Val that I had gone to college with. Sorry, high school. She was more of an acquaintance, really. After high school, she was a single mom. And what was sad about Val's story was she was diagnosed with a very rare form of brain cancer. And she battled that for, I think, about a decade. And at some point in her journey, I think maybe just through Facebook or social media, I became aware of her story. And I think she had maybe posted a blog post update, and I started following her journey through her blog. And there was just something about her story that was so sad, but also, again, in a strange way, very helpful, because I think although her life was just filled with unimaginable hardship, it really taught me that a meaningful life is not defined by its length or its ease, but it's just valuable because it is. And I think a lot of times in life, especially maybe the type A people pleasers among us, raise your hand if you're one of them. I'm your people too. I'm recovering, but definitely historically a people pleaser. I think that there's a sense of like almost trying to earn love or value or meaning in life. And we forget that like just because we existed, we always had that. We were always valuable. Our lives always had meaning. We were always fully enough and worthy of love. And that would not be different if we were suffering from a medical diagnosis, or we had a learning disability, or any other hardship that could happen. So I think that that journey, and you know, even the difficult thoughts and feelings that came up with realizing that Val would never see, for example, her children grow up, and that she would never get to see them get married, or, you know, all of those things that we kind of think are a given in life, it really taught me that any life, no matter how brief or painful, is still absolutely beautiful and worthy of gratitude. And then last but not least, the final person that I've lost in the month of December came closer to home. And this was my father-in-law, Fred, lovingly called him Papa Fred. And Papa Fred died suddenly of a heart attack this time last year. In fact, he died on December 15th, and I'm recording this on the 13th. So we're about to honor the memory of his passing in a couple of days here. Papa Fred was a dentist for 40 years in a small community, you know, saw the same patients two times a year, every year for 40 years, and then their kids and then their kids' kids. And all those people turned up for his funeral and told us so many stories of just how generous and caring and truly interested he was in all of their lives and all of their loved ones over the years. And then he retired in December of 2023. They actually came down here and visited us, and we had a great Disney trip with them. And then he had one beautiful year of retirement, got into all these great hobbies like rucking, which is just hiking with a weighted backpack. And he would, you know, stop and visit with neighbors and help people out just like he did for 40 years at his clinic. And, you know, 1 year later, he died of this freak heart attack. And there was this definite shock of unexpected loss with Papa Fred, and kind of this sense of he was robbed of this time, especially after kind of entering this new chapter of retirement. And there was also at the same time of this kind of like, hey, that's not fair. He didn't get all of that time he deserved. There was also at the same time this utter sense of completeness, because every single person who told us stories about him, and I felt the same way, even as his daughter-in-law, every person knew how much he loved them. Because whether it was in his clinic with his patients or with his sons, Justin and Jeremy, or even with me as kind of a surrogate daughter, you know, even more kind of than with my own family, which, you know, little callback to the fundamentalist Christian upbringing, but I'll have to go into this maybe in a future episode, but the change in my belief structure essentially led to familial estrangement. So I no longer have a relationship with my own father, but Papa Fred, you know, took me right under his wing and was so much more of a father to me in the adult years of my life, from, again, about 18 onward when I met Justin till today. Which is just such a gift to have and to know how loved we all were. So when I think of the lessons that I learned from Papa Fred, it's just the fullness of a life expressed through daily kindness and acts of service. And just, you know, it reminds me that, again, life isn't really measured, the meaning of the life isn't measured in how long it is, but in how fully we engage and love and connect while we're here. And he just lived so generously and left nothing unsaid. He wasn't afraid to share emotion. Every time we would say goodbye, whether we were visiting them or they were visiting us, he would tear up and hug us and tell us how much he loved us. And then the emotional text messages would start 5 minutes after he was out the door. And it was just a really, really lovely thing to see how free he was with sharing that love. So I think after, you know, sharing those four stories, Sasha first at 18, followed by Nikki 18 years later at 36, watching Val from a distance, she passed away a couple of Christmas Eves ago, and then my father-in-law, Papa Fred, last year. If I could kind of sum up all of their legacies in one phrase or one kind of thought or takeaway, it's probably that time is our most precious non-renewable resource, and that really aging is a privilege. Because, you know, if I really think about each one of them, I guarantee you that either they or, you know, their surviving family would give anything for just one more day to hug someone they love, to laugh, to simply exist. Even if it was like a mediocre day, they'd love to have that opportunity. And so I think reflecting on that truth kind of forces me to sit back and ask man, if time is our most non-renewable resource, like I think back to that book, 4,000 Weeks, that I've talked about in previous episodes, and I'll link to it in the show notes too. Highly recommend if you haven't read it yet. But the premise of the book is basically that if we're lucky enough to live to be 80 years old, we get 4,000 weeks on Earth. And so how are we living out our lives? How are we filling those weeks? How are we spending our time? And, you know, that really does, that idea paired with reflecting on and honoring the lives and legacies of these loved ones that I've lost, it kind of forces me to reflect, how am I spending my days? The good ones, the bad ones, the kind of mediocre, ordinary ones. And also, how do I want to be spending them? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we all only get one life. And I think so many things can hold us back from really fully living life the way that we want to. But I think kind of reflecting on that loss and really death and keeping top of mind that none of us get out of this life alive. I think I've said that before on an episode. Apparently, I get a little bit morbid at times in these reflections. But if that's true, regardless of your belief structure, even if you believe in an afterlife, you never get this life back. And if that's true, then it really pays to think about how you're living and what lessons you can take from that. And kind of strip away what really doesn't matter and let the things that really matter become more clear. So, you know, when it comes to my own work, it generally makes me want to reflect back on not just the physical, but also the psychological, the emotional, the mental, the relational, interpersonal side of life, and really do some real reflection. So I thought I would maybe just leave you with a couple of things that you might want to use to reflect as you kind of round out this year. I think actually, although there's maybe no harm in setting a New Year's goal, depending on how it's done, of course, you don't need to do the whole new year, new you. I think going 0 to 90 is probably the number one way you can guarantee that you will burn yourself out and not meet your goal. That's probably an episode for the new year. But I do think that if you're going to do some kind of intentional goal in the new year, it's really important to first look back and spend a good amount of time reflecting on where you've been. So just some questions that you might want to think about as you wrap up this year is, you know, looking back as you think about kind of the fragility of life and all like the stories I just shared, I'm sure you have your own stories of challenging times in the holiday season, perhaps also stories of grief or loss. Maybe not even to the point of like an actual death, but maybe even a living death. Like I mentioned, estrangement with my own father. That's sometimes a living death can be kind of harder than an actual death because there is the thought that you could reconcile, but maybe something keeps you from doing that. And you want to recheck in with yourself about that from time to time. I know I do that all the time. So I think it really pays, regardless of where you're at, regardless of what you believe, regardless of what your goals might be for the new year, to first reflect quite a bit. And maybe just thinking back on the past year, you might ask yourself, where did I give my best energy in the past year? And maybe, you know, really try to sit with that and be honest, because maybe you're thinking ahead to the new year and you have all these goals about your health and they involve working out or nutrition or stress management or any number of things. But then you reflecting back, when you're really honest with yourself, you realize, oh, I gave my best energy to a lot of stressing out, actually. And maybe even to relationships or goals that really aren't what I say are my intentions. So if I'm honest with myself, I'm clearly not living in alignment with my values. That's an important thing to kind of be honest with yourself about. And then maybe looking forward, knowing that our time is limited, thinking of that 4,000 weeks, maybe really asking yourself, what will matter to me at the end of my weeks? And as a result of that, what kind of legacy am I quietly building now? You know, sometimes it's interesting to kind of do a mental exercise and wonder, what would people say in my eulogy? What would they write in my obituary? How will I be remembered? Am I just going to be remembered for like working overtime and maybe being a really stressed person? Or am I actually carving out the time and space to cultivate the life that I really want to live with intention, whatever that looks like for me? So as that year winds down and it's kind of natural to look back and then with looking back, look ahead, I would just really encourage you to look back with compassion and not just critique. Because I really do believe, just like I am always saying, you are the best expert on what you need. And maybe something like Better with Becky and Build with Becky could be like a helpful structure or guide to help you navigate those goals and put practices in place. Even with that, though, you are the expert. And so as much as maybe you look back at the year and maybe you don't feel like you've met every goal you had for yourself, I really encourage you to add the word yet to that and say, okay, I didn't get there yet, but I'm going to add some compassion and not just self-criticism and critique. Because I also really believe while you're the expert on what you need, you're doing the best you can with what you have at the moment. Now, might you benefit from reprioritization, from a new intention? Sure. All of us could, right? And you will absolutely, when you are ready, take those steps. I guarantee it. In the meantime, though, as you look forward, I encourage you to, just like you look back with compassion and not critique, to maybe look forward with more of what is the intention I'm after and what's maybe that legacy that I want to leave, rather than putting a bunch of pressure on yourself to perform or please or go so hard out the gate that you burn yourself out by February. So maybe a couple little prompts to help with that compassion and intention as opposed to critique and pressure might be, what am I most proud of in the past year? Even if I didn't accomplish everything, what am I most proud of? What did I do well? And what do I want to carry into the next year? Because I think a lot of times when we overhaul too many things at once, it comes from kind of this place of not appreciating how much we're already doing and how well we're already navigating things. So just know, although there's always a way to optimize, there's always a way to be better. And that's, you know, part of my business, Better with Becky and building strength. And if that's a goal in the new year, you can check out the website, www.betterwithbecky.com. You know where to find my stuff. But at the same time, I think it really pays to just sit with who you are now and what's going well and what you're doing well and what you want to continue and carry into the new year. So as we wrap up this year and start looking ahead to the next, I just want to remind you that if you're missing someone this holiday season, or if you're not always feeling 100% happy or festive, you are absolutely not alone in that. And that, in fact, allowing those more difficult, challenging feelings will probably only enhance your ability to navigate the full spectrum of human emotion and actually feel the positive emotions more fully when they come. Like I said at the beginning, the sweet isn't as sweet without the bitter. Without that grief, we might not fully feel the gratitude for the good things in our lives. And, you know, even the losses that we experience or the people that we're missing, those stories and those lives live on in how we then choose to reflect on and live our own lives. And, you know, it may sound cliche, but my former career as a Spanish teacher, one of my favorite things about being a Spanish teacher was teaching Día de los Muertos, Day of the Dead, and just kind of the idea that as long as we remember people that we loved, they're never truly gone. In fact, in Mexico, there's kind of a belief in three deaths for each person. So, you know, there's kind of like the moment that your body dies, and then there's the moment that you're buried in the ground and maybe your soul departs if you believe in that. But then they have a practice during Day of the Dead of building altars to put photos on and maybe flowers and even like the deceased's favorite food and beverage. And there's kind of a belief that as long as your family is remembering and honoring you, you can come back and visit and even kind of be with them, and they keep your memory alive. So really nobody dies until the very last person that ever knew them or even like heard of them, which, you know, is in Mexican culture kind of forever, because they continue to pass down the photos and the memories. And it might even be like a great, 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 great grandfather, but that photo is still getting put up on that altar. He is still in some form living on. So as long as we actually can kind of hold those challenging feelings and remember the loss and legacy of those that we've loved, we can actually use that to then carve out the life that we want to live, and to do that with intention and know that just like we keep their memories alive, we'll never truly be gone either. We're not the center of the universe. Nothing revolves around us, which is very freeing and liberating. And we won't be forgotten. Our lives do matter. And we only get one life. So it's important to reflect on it. This time of year especially, I really encourage you to take the time to not just, you know, get stressed about all the shopping and presents and commercialism, but just to truly have presence, to stop being a human doing all the things, but just be a human being in the moment, and to start to really consider what it might look like to live in alignment with what matters most to you. Because at the end of the day, nobody is going to live your best life for you. You know, it's your life, just like you're the expert on it and you're the best one to meet your needs. You're also responsible for that life. And nobody is going to come and save you, and nobody is going to force your hand. So I think keeping that in mind and remembering those stories and lessons, the takeaway that I really have, and this reminds me of a little talk I was having with a couple of friends recently. It was actually at a birthday celebration, and we were talking about kind of legacy and maybe, you know, that slight like darker side of birthdays that you can feel time passing and wondering if you're really like living the best life you can and will it matter when you're gone and all these things, maybe even dreading aging. When I think of all these people that I've loved and lost and the legacies they've left behind, I go back to that idea that I mentioned at the beginning of how much of a privilege it is to age and how lucky I am to still be here and how I don't know when that will end. You know, Sasha didn't expect it to end at 18. I can tell you that. I'm sure Nikki didn't think 36 was it and that her daughter Lola would never, you know, have her mom at her wedding day, for example. I'm sure Papa Fred thought he would get more retirement than 1 year. And I'm sure that Val's children are living on without her, but at times really struggle with that. And who knows how much longer I get, and who knows how much longer you get. So just kind of bringing that all together, I don't have a huge takeaway, but if you have something you'd like to share with me, I'd love to hear from you this time of year or any time of year. You can reach me at podcast@betterwithbecky.com. If you have questions or suggestions for a future podcast episode, feel free to leave that as well. And in the meantime, thank you for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life. Happy holidays. See you next year.